I'm Montse Alvarado, tonight on EWTN News Nightly. On again, off again, a ceasefire in the Middle East broken right after it takes effect, where it stands now. 3 years later, on the anniversary of the historic Dobbs decision reversing Roe versus Wade, we look at the opportunities and challenges facing the pro-life movement. Protecting the seal. As Washington State takes aim at the confessional, the Department of Justice says, not so fast. And Pope Leo is greeted by thousands of seminarians. We hear from one who attended this special Jubilee event. These stories and more tonight.
From EWTN, the Global Catholic Network, this is EWTN News Nightly.
Thank you for being with us on the solemnity of the Nativity of St. John the Baptist. Our top story tonight, President Donald Trump insists Israel and Iran stick to a ceasefire and honor a tentative truce. He spoke about the conflict in the Middle East during his journey to Europe, where he's going to attend a NATO summit at The Hague. White House correspondent Owen Jensen joins us in studio with the latest. Owen, great to have you.
Montse, good evening to you. The White House says President Trump did not mince words when he spoke to Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu from Air Force One. Trump wants the fighting to end.
We basically have two countries that have been fighting so long and so hard that they don't know what the they're doing. Do you understand that?
President Donald Trump addressed reporters today just steps from the White House.
I didn't like the fact that Israel unloaded right after we made the deal. They didn't have to unload. And I didn't like the fact that the retaliation was very strong.
Israel also raised alarm when Iran launched missiles into its airspace less than 3 hours after the ceasefire went into effect. It vowed to retaliate. But President Trump posted, Israel is not going to attack Iran. All planes will turn around and head home.
These guys got to calm down. Ridiculous.
The president also spoke to reporters on Air Force One. He says he's not looking for regime change in Iran. The president posting, both Israel and Iran wanted to stop the war equally. It was my great honor to destroy all nuclear facilities and capability and then stop the war. President Trump later landed in the Netherlands, where he met the king and queen and attended NATO meetings.
Okay, wonderful. Thank you very much.
The president says the head of NATO praised his decision to strike three Iranian nuclear sites because it makes us safer. But the U.S. Department of Homeland Security warns there could be a reprisal against Americans. The U.S. State Department also added this assessment of the situation overseas.
The president has believed from the beginning that diplomacy can stop wars, that it is the thing that we should rely on. He leaned into that, and it's continuing to work. This is a dynamic now that is in play.
President Trump wants European countries to pay more for their own defense. NATO is expected to endorse a higher spending goal tomorrow, but Spain has balked at the proposal. Montse, back to you.
Thank you so much, Owen. Now, for more insights, we'd like to bring in EWTN News contributor Alberto Fernandez, who recently penned a commentary on the situation with Iran in the National Catholic Register. Alberto, thank you so much for joining us. Since the U.S. strikes in Iran over the weekend, there has been a lot of talk about a war with Iran. But in your piece, you quote a former staffer of Presidents Bill Clinton and Joe Biden as saying Iran has been at war with the United States for 46 years. Can you explain what she means?
Well, I think it's pretty obvious. The Iran, the revolution of 1979, Iran is a revolutionary regime in confrontation with the United States. And since the invasion of the U.S. Embassy in Tehran in 1979, to the attacks on the American embassies in Kuwait and Lebanon, the Marines in Lebanon, the Khobar Towers in Saudi Arabia. There was a direct conflict in 1988 between the Reagan administration and Iran. The U.S. Navy sank most of the Iranian Navy in 1988, and Iran backed down. After President Trump killed Qasem Soleimani in 2020, Iran backed down. So there's a long history of kinetic action or violence or war or terrorism from the Iranian side, and obviously strong reprisals and responses from the U.S. as well throughout the decades.
there's a different threshold and tolerance in terms of force in the region, or so it seems. How would you say the U.S. strikes on Iran's nuclear facilities differ than these previous interventions you've described?
Well, it's certainly more important. So in 1988, there, as I said, there was direct fighting between the U.S. Navy and the Iranian Navy. But this was at sea off the coast of Iran. These were airstrikes inside Iran on the crown jewels of the Iranian nuclear program. So that is a kind of a higher level of action within the context of everything that's happened over the last 40 odd years.
Well, you said that American administrations have been so adamant about Iran not acquiring nuclear weapons and that it's not just about Israel. What else is involved here?
Well, it's nuclear proliferation. Many countries in the region have made it clear to the Americans that if Iran gets a bomb, they will do so. So it's not just merely saying, oh, it's Israel and it's Iran. Iran gets a bomb, maybe it won't use it. Saudi Arabia will want to be able to defend itself. Turkey will be able to defend itself, will want to defend itself. Maybe Egypt, maybe others. So it's the fear of nuclear proliferation and a kind of a reignited arms race, which is a huge concern for the United States, which has nothing at all to do with Israel.
The media hasn't talked about religion very often when talking about this conflict. How does that factor into it?
Well, it factors into it in many strange and fascinating ways. Much of the Sunni Arab Muslim world has been either quietly or openly cheering the actions of Israel against Iran. You see big-time online influencers, say from Syria, with hundreds of thousands of followers, mocking the killing of Iranian generals. They'll write their names and they'll say, "General so-and-so, the slaughterer of Syrian women and children, is now dead." So the religious factor, we think of Israeli Jews versus Iranian Muslims, but it's actually Sunni Shia as well, and many other permutations as well, Christian Muslim as well.
Well, Alberto, we'll be looking to you for more analysis as this conflict continues. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Members of Congress were scheduled to receive a classified briefing from the president's intelligence leaders about the U.S. strike on Iran's nuclear facilities, but that meeting has been postponed. Right now, lawmakers, especially Democrats, say they're looking for answers about the president's unilateral decision to launch military action against Iran, some arguing he should have gone to Congress for approval or at least provided more justification for the attacks.
Now, this last-minute postponement of our briefing is outrageous, it's evasive, it's derelict. They're bobbing and weaving and ducking. Senators deserve full transparency. There is a legal obligation for the administration to inform Congress about precisely what is happening. What are they afraid of?
All the negotiations went nowhere because the Iranians didn't want them to go anywhere. President Trump acted. And it was brilliant, it was bold, and it will live in history.
Right now, the briefing for the Senate has been rescheduled for Thursday, and no date has been given for when the House briefing will take place. The Latin Patriarch of Jerusalem is speaking out about the current escalation between Iran and Israel. In an exclusive interview with EWTN's Arabic language news service, ACI MENA, Cardinal Pier Battista Pizzaballa talked about the current regional conflict. He issued a clear message to political leaders saying, quote, "The path forward does not lie in military action, but in dreaming of the future and building hope for it," adding, "Force, violence, and war do not build anything. They destroy people, land, relationships, and wipe out hope in the future." Cardinal Pizzaballa also urged the faithful to not forget the suffering in the Holy Land, especially in Gaza and the West Bank, saying, quote, "We must keep speaking, writing, and maintaining ties with churches around the world to remind them that the situation here is extremely complex and that we cannot forget the weakest and the poorest." The cardinal made no mention of the remaining hostages still being held by Hamas. The Justice Department sues Washington State over a law forcing priests to break the seal of confession. Bishops in Washington State filed a lawsuit challenging the law last month. In a statement, the DOJ says the measure, quote, violates the free exercise of religion for all Catholics. The law says priests must violate the seal of confession if the penitent confesses sins related to child abuse. But the measure excludes other professionals, including nurses and therapists. Several Orthodox churches joined the lawsuit brought by the Catholic bishops. Washington State's Catholic bishops add that they have implemented policies to protect children that go further than state law requires. Today marks the third anniversary of the U.S. Supreme Court's decision in the Dobbs versus Jackson Women's Health Organization case, a landmark ruling which overturned Roe versus Wade. The Dobbs decision restored the right of the people and their elected representatives to protect unborn children from abortion. Capitol Hill correspondent Eric Rosales joins us with more. Eric?
Well, good evening, Monse. Yes, as a result of that decision, 23 states now have laws protecting the unborn in the first trimester. Pro-life organizations like Susan B. Anthony Pro-Life America, they're celebrating the anniversary, saying that we are a better nation for it. Republican Senator Majority Leader John Thune says that there is still a lot of work that needs to be done.
And I look forward to the day when the life of every American, born and unborn, is protected. And when being small and vulnerable does not mean that your human rights are any less respected.
Pro-life lawmakers add ending taxpayer dollars going to big abortion is key and is currently part of President Trump's Big Beautiful Bill. Democrats held a press conference today vowing to stop the GOP budget bill, which does include a provision that would halt Medicaid funding to abortion providers who receive more than $1 million in federal reimbursements, essentially cutting funding for Planned Parenthood.
It's clear that the heartbreak and damage being caused by Republicans' war on abortion is only growing, but so is the public opposition. The outcry is getting louder and louder as more and more people see the full horror of abortion bans.
Democratic Senator Tammy Baldwin used the occasion to reintroduce the Women's Health Protection Act, which would codify abortion rights.
This bill would tell Republicans to butt out of women's health care, ensuring that states can't put up medically unnecessary barriers that infringe on a woman's right to choose.
Bishop Daniel Thomas of Toledo, Ohio, chairman of the U.S. Conference of Catholic Bishops Committee on Pro-Life Activities, put out a statement, quote, I urge all Catholics to engage their elected officials on all issues that threaten the gift of human life, in particular the threat of abortion. He goes on to say the Dobbs decision not only gave states the freedom to protect children, but also paved the way for pro-life victories nationally. The federal government is now closer than ever to defunding Planned Parenthood and other organizations who abort. Abortion profiting harms women and babies.
Bishop Thomas adds that despite the good that the Dobbs decision accomplished, several states have now enacted extreme pro-abortion policies to override existing pro-life safeguards. He says the battle is far from over. At the Capitol, Eric Rosales, EWTN News Nightly. Monse, back to you.
Thanks, Eric. Joining us now to discuss this some more is Kelsey Pritchard, Director of State Public Affairs with Susan B. Anthony Pro-Life America. Kelsey, thank you for being with us again. I know you've been part of our pro-life coverage. Looking back on this three-year anniversary of the Dobbs decision, what has been the impact on the pro-life movement in your view?
Well, today we're celebrating the lives that have been saved because of the Dobbs decision and pro-life laws in the states. There are babies and toddlers who are alive today who wouldn't be without those things. And so our country is immeasurably better off because they're a part of it. Yet today we're also recognizing the work that's ahead because the truth is that abortions have gone up in this country since the Dobbs decision. And that has a lot to do with the fact that blue states are undermining red states' pro-life laws. And the Biden administration, the way that they allowed the mail order of abortion drugs. And so we're taking this as an opportunity to reflect and look ahead to all of the work that is yet to be done to save more lives from abortion.
Now, it's clear with Senator Baldwin's comments that there's still a lot of work to be done here. Where do things stand with the pro-life cause, especially in the U.S. Congress, as they try to get the big, beautiful bill to the president's desk?
Yeah, so we are hopeful that we will be able to take away the Medicaid funding from abortion businesses like Planned Parenthood through the One Big Beautiful Bill. Republicans have been really great champions of that measure because they recognize that we should not be subsidizing the number one cause of death in this country and that women deserve care better than Planned Parenthood provides them. And so we're really hopeful that that measure can get through the One Big Beautiful Bill and that it's something that the president will have signed by July 4th. And it would be historic. This is something that we've been trying to do for years, for decades. And this really is the next big step to saving lives in this country.
Now, I want to get your reaction on something local. A new Chicago clinic is advertising abortions in the third trimester, as Illinois is one of the few places in the country where abortion is legal up to around 34 weeks. How concerning is this?
Yeah, it's an awful thing and also a reminder of how far the blue states have gone on the issue of abortion. We're talking about an abortion facility that's going to do abortions on babies who can survive outside of the womb at 34 weeks. You have a very, very good chance of surviving. You might not only be in the NICU, you might be in the nursery at that point. And babies at this stage are 5 to 5.5 pounds. That's how big my first son was when he was born. And so this is a really awful thing, a really revealing thing. At the same time, I think we can be grateful that they're being open and honest about this because we all need to realize that this is happening in our country. And that the fight against abortion and late-term abortion and abortions of babies who are viable, it has not been won. And it has not, we're not close yet. And so we all have a role to play in fighting in this fight.
Much work still left to do. Thank you so much. Kelsey Pritchard with the SBA Pro-Life America. We have a lot more still to come on EWTN News Nightly. It was 16,000 feet in the air when the door flew open, causing the jetliner to make an emergency landing. Today, we found out what happened. And Pope Leo welcomes thousands of aspiring priests as he celebrates the Jubilee of Seminarians. We speak to one of the young men who was there. National Transportation Safety Board has announced the probable cause of last year's Air Alaska mid-air door plug blowout.
An accident like this does not happen because of an individual or even a group of individuals. Aviation is much more resilient than that. An accident like this only happens when there are multiple system failures.
The chairwoman said that Boeing, its supplier Spirit AeroSystems, and the Federal Aviation Administration were all to blame. She added that the agencies should have spotted safety deficiencies long before the accident. The blowout left a gaping hole in the side of the plane as it was more than 16,000 feet in the air. Thankfully, no one was hurt. Meanwhile, Federal Reserve Chairman Jerome Powell testified before the House Financial Services Committee. He explained to lawmakers that the economy must be evaluated before deciding whether to reduce borrowing costs.
What will actually happen with rates is going to depend on the path of the economy, and that's highly uncertain. So I would just say what that means at this moment in time is that a significant majority of the committee, but also there's a pretty significant minority that doesn't agree, but a significant majority feels it will be appropriate to reduce rates later this year.
The Fed left interest rates unchanged last week. The decision came despite Trump's continued efforts to press Powell for faster interest rate cuts to boost the economy. Pope Leo XIV welcomed around 4,000 seminarians to the Vatican for a special Jubilee event. In his reflection, the Holy Father reminded seminarians that their task is to never settle for less, never be satisfied, but to be passionate about the priestly life, living in the present, and looking to the future with a prophetic heart. Joining us now from Rome is Pepe Zinkovich, seminarian for the Archdiocese of Los Angeles. You're here in Rome for the Jubilee of Seminarians, Pepe. How has the experience been so far? And what was it like meeting the Holy Father earlier today?
Yeah, this morning, thousands of young seminarians flooded St. Peter's Basilica to hear the words of our Holy Father addressed to them. And it was very moving to see all the excitement and the joy. There was singing, there was clapping as Holy Father processed in. People trying to bend over the fence to meet him and shake his hand. And what was an interesting contrast was the sheer silence when he began to speak. The joyful crowd immediately became quiet and tried to absorb every single word that the Holy Father was telling us. What struck me in particular was his emphasis on loving the way Jesus loved. The Holy Father said that us future priests should strive to love like Jesus, and the way we do that is through a deep prayer life, cultivating an intimate relationship with Jesus Christ.
Now, Pepe, you're a seminarian for the Archdiocese of Los Angeles. We were just with Archbishop Gomez, who mentioned that the Eucharistic revival has really lifted the number of seminarians coming into the church. Can you share a little bit about your personal journey? What led you to say yes to the call of the priesthood?
Yeah, my personal call to the priesthood was filled with joy. I grew up in a big Catholic family. I'm number 9 of 10 kids. And so I grew up going to Mass, praying the rosary. I went to a great Catholic school, was formed in the home. And despite all that, I never felt called to the priesthood until I went away for college. It was in college where I really made the faith my own, and it became something personal to me. I met this priest that was very, very devoted to the Eucharist and loved the Mass and loved Jesus Christ, and that really inspired me to love Jesus Christ myself. And in prayer and adoration, I felt called to be a priest for Jesus Christ, a priest of the Catholic Church. I got really scared, and I ran away from that calling for a couple of years, but the Lord never gave up on me, and He called me over and over again until I finally accepted.
Well, you're in Rome these days on another kind of adventure with the Rome Experience. What is it that you're hoping to bring back home with you to your parish, to your diocese, or to your fellow seminarians who don't have this opportunity?
Yeah, so this Rome Experience has been an experience of a lifetime. Living in the Eternal City and being close to the Chair Peter was something very formative and life-changing. What I would take home to Los Angeles would be a deeper commitment to my prayer life and to cultivating a deeper, intimate relationship with Jesus Christ, a deeper sense of what it means to be a priest, what it means to be a father, and the particular virtues that go along with that. And finally, I'm going to bring home a deeper sense of community and fraternity, that we are meant to live with each other and for each other.
Well, that's beautiful. We're grateful for your priesthood, well, your journey into the priesthood. Pepe Zinkevich, seminarian for the Archdiocese of Los Angeles. Up next on EWTN News Nightly, it hasn't been done in more than 150 years. We'll take you to Ireland to show you what drew in hundreds of Catholic faithful. Plus, it's the solemnity of the Nativity of St. John the Baptist. Other than Jesus and Mary, he's the only other saint whose birth we celebrate, and we'll tell you why. In Ireland, hundreds of Catholic faithful turned out to reconsecrate the country to the Sacred Heart of Jesus on the Feast of Corpus Christi. This was the scene on Sunday in the village of Knock. Ahead of the consecration, Archbishop Éamon Martin of Armagh received an apostolic blessing from Pope Leo XIV, a pledge of joy and peace sent to all who were present. The faithful called on Christ to protect them and have mercy on them.
Lord Jesus Christ, King of love and Prince of peace, reign in our hearts, our homes, and in Ireland, our country. Conquer all the powers of evil and bring us to share in the victory of your Sacred Heart. May all we say and do give glory and praise to you and to the Father and the Holy Spirit, God living and reigning forever and ever. Amen.
Ireland was last consecrated to the Sacred Heart in 1873, 152 years ago. Today is the solemnity of the Nativity of St. John the Baptist. Usually, when a saint is celebrated by the Church, the celebration falls on the date of the saint's death. And though we do commemorate the beheading of St. John the Baptist, we also celebrate his birth, and it carries a Christological significance.
Even the birth of John the Baptist points to Christ. So the entire life of St. John the Baptist is relative to Jesus Christ. And so when you think of John's birth, like at the even before the birth, at the visitation, he's already pointing to Christ from the womb. And so the birth of John the Baptist is the birth of the last and greatest prophet who points to Jesus Christ. So he's the beginning of something new.
And another beautiful element of this solemnity is that even today, creation bears witness to the close relationship between St. John the Baptist and Jesus Christ.
And you already see the relationship between Jesus's birth and John the Baptist's birth within nature. So today is the beginning of summer solstice, and so the days begin getting shorter. And at Christmas, Christ's birth, they begin getting longer. And so you think of when John the Baptist says, he must increase, I must decrease. So even within creation and when their births are, you see that their births are intertwined together.
We thank you for watching tonight. Remember, you can follow us on social media, Facebook, X, and Instagram at EWTN News Nightly. I'm Montse Alvarado. Good night, and God bless you.